Welcome to the Cancer Care Connect workshop. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. During the workshop, you will hear from our panel of expert speakers. We will allow time for questions and comments following the presentation. Instructions will be given at that time. If anyone should require assistance during the workshop, please press star then zero on your touch-tone telephone. As a reminder, this workshop is being recorded. I would now like to introduce your moderator for today's workshop, Dr. Carolyn Messner, Director of Education and Training at Cancer Care. Please go ahead.
Oh, thank you so much, Andrea, and I too would like to welcome everyone to today's Cancer Connect Education Workshop, Living with Lung Cancer, and today's program is for caregivers, practical tips for coping with your loved one's lung cancer. So this program really focuses on caregivers of people living with lung cancer. And today's program is a collaborative effort between Cancer Care and many other cancer organizations. And I also want to specifically call out some of the lung cancer organizations that have really helped to spread the word about the program. So lungcancer.org, Lung Cancer Alliance, and Longevity Foundation. These are and Free Debris. These are important organizations in the lung cancer sphere that have really helped to spread the word, along with all of our other organizations that have collaborated with us on the program today. And because of that collaboration and your interest in this program, we have over 583 participants on the program today. And you come from all over the United States, and we also have international participants from Canada, Costa Rica, the Netherlands, Romania, United Kingdom, and Venezuela. So you're really from all over the world, and it's really a credit to all of you that you've chosen to spend this next hour with us. Now, today's program is supported by AbbVie, Ariad Pharmaceuticals, Inc., Celgene Corporation, a grant from Genentech, a contribution from Lilly, and Pfizer. And I really want to thank them for their support of this, not only today's program, but this entire series, and also for their actually cooperative partnership and collaboration in making this program possible. So we really appreciate that, that support from multiple settings, institutions. Now, we have wonderful speakers on our program today, and I want to begin by introducing our first speaker. And our first speaker is Dr. Stuart Fleischman. Dr. Fleischman is Founding Director of Cancer Support Services, Continuing Cancer Centers of New York, and he's Accreditation Surveyor, American College of Surgeons Commission on Cancer. Dr. Fleischman is going to address what we know about caregivers, helping to manage your loved one's treatment, and the role of caregivers in adherence. It's my pleasure now to turn this program over to Dr. Fleischman.
Yes, hello, everybody, and as Dr. Messner said, thank you for participating in this call. We hope it'll be valuable to you. When I was thinking about what to present, I was thinking about who are caregivers, and all of us are caregivers at some point in our life for children or for spouses or for parents or other relatives or friends in the community or neighbors. So we all, at some point in our lives, have had the big responsibility of being caregivers, and it needs to be said that this is very hard work. It's often very rewarding work because we're helping somebody when they need the help the most, and it's very intimate work, and that we can spend time with people in a way that we can't do it in sort of casual, everyday family life. But it is a lot of work, especially when some of us are working full-time and raising our children and taking care of other relatives while one person is going through lung cancer treatment. So it just needs to be acknowledged that this is tough stuff, even under the best of circumstances. We do know from a number of years of looking at the situation a little more critically that it is really hard for caregivers to watch and experience someone's illness. We pretty much know from a number of studies over the years that caregivers often estimate the burdens that their family or friends go through when they're being treated for lung cancer, and that professionals sometimes underestimate that burden. We could probably spend the whole hour figuring out why that is so, but it is sometimes just hard to understand and get into the skin of what the individual patient is going through. In general, people were quite frightened about the lung cancer treatment. People were pretty negative about it until the last few years when the tide is turning, and it hasn't turned for everybody all the time, but we have much more to offer to patients from a surgical point of view, newer, more minimally invasive treatments, from the chemotherapy point of view, some new oral medicines that are showing great promise, and even the kind of radiation therapy that's used, which is more effective in sparing a lot of the healthy tissue from the side effects of treatment. So things are definitely turning around, and we need to keep that in mind. I think if I had to pick out one really important element of how to be a good caregiver is I think it needs to be that the caregivers are really up to date on exactly what happens during lung cancer, because it is the caregiver who is the first line in deciding what needs medical attention, what is just sort of expectable, and somebody who really understands the situation is really a lot better off, and they can feel better about the kind of job that they're doing, because most of us feel like we'd like to do be as good a caregiver as possible, as well as be informative to the healthcare team. So it's important just to understand that knowing a lot about lung cancer is helpful. Other speakers will describe the kinds of resources that are out there for information about lung cancer. But particularly, I wanted to highlight some things. Fatigue is common during lung cancer, especially as it progresses. Fatigue can come from a number of different reasons. It's sometimes easy for all of us to think it's just attitude that a patient or a loved one is just upset that they have lung cancer, and it's easier to ascribe that feeling in that situation just to the circumstances. But we do know much more about lung cancer than that, and a lot of it is based in the disease and the treatments, and we need to be aware of that. That feeling breathless or being afraid of feeling breathless is quite fatiguing, especially when it happens all through our waking hours. So that's important to remember. Sometimes having oxygen in the house or nebulizers can be helpful. Sometimes it's not. Again, that's a decision that each patient and caregiver should make with their primary cancer treatment team members. There are some pluses and minuses to having oxygen available, and that's a decision that should be based on good, sound medical judgment and discussion with patients and families. Weight loss is often a thing that happens in lung cancer, and it's important to identify that it's very common and that it's not somebody who's frightened and just giving up, but it is part and parcel of the disease process and sometimes attributable to the side effects of treatment. We do know that even if lung cancer is localized in one area of the body, it gives off proteins that circulate through the blood system, not the cancer, just the proteins, that it can affect the whole body, and that could include energy level and appetite and a desire and ability to eat. It's somewhat easy to think it's just a matter of being upset or being depressed, but that's not necessarily so. We know a lot more about that than we did a number of years ago, and the treatment team is generally pretty good at focusing on this and sorting out the factors to see if a nutritional intervention is involved or some counseling or antidepressant medicine or other techniques to actually stimulate appetite and restore the proper number of calories to whatever extent is as possible. So it's really important to remember that it's not just an emotional component here, but it's part and parcel of the disease and the treatment itself, at least for a period of time during treatment. We do know that if lung cancer has involved other parts of the body, that pain can be bad, especially if pain presses on a nerve or in a bone. And since we're flooded with so much conflicting information about the importance of proper pain treatment, and yet the news floods us with information about people who are abusing or taking strong narcotic or opioid medicines for non-cancer reasons, sometimes diverting those medicines, that it's important to really get the facts and have a good, honest relationship with the care team, because the care team wants to treat pain as aggressively and as adequately as the patient and caregiver are comfortable with, and it is important just to make sure that those medicines are safeguarded so that it doesn't get diverted to someone else's hands. But pain is common during treatment, and we really are prepared to address that in a responsible way. So just being aware of these things, being aware of the radiation schedule and the chemotherapy schedule and what needs to be done beforehand and afterwards can really take a lot of the stress off people because you know what to expect and you can make a plan. Also, knowing what resources are available through insurance or in your community as far as help. What we also know about caregivers is caregivers are often quite reticent to reach out and ask for help, but it is really helpful to do that. And sometimes we don't like to. We feel that maybe we're not being as good as we can be. But when caregiving stretches over weeks or months, you need to reach out for help, be it other family members for some respite, being your community, making sure you know what your insurance can pay for and what you can access. Very, very helpful. Sometimes even if a patient has been is a veteran and has veterans benefits, there are some benefits to access. Probably could be accessed in a lot easier way than they are now, but getting help to do that by someone who's knowledgeable is a good thing if those benefits are something that you have earned and deserve. So I would think the other final message is ask for help. Ask in your community, ask other family members, and if you feel like you don't know how or who to ask for help, cancer care can help with that. So I think being knowledgeable and being circumspect about what limits are and wanting to do a good job are really the things that we know about caregiving and can help us get through what is both an extraordinarily difficult but an extraordinarily rewarding experience. I'll pass this back to Dr. Messner.
Oh, thank you so much, Dr. Fleischman. That was really a wonderful introduction to the whole program. A lot of very important issues and concerns for caregivers to think about, and I'm sure there'll be questions for you during the Q&A. Thank you so much. And our next speaker is Dr. Bob Lee. Dr. Lee is a medical oncologist, thoracic oncology service, developmental therapeutics, Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center. And Dr. Lee is going to address the important role of a caregiver in communicating with the healthcare team, follow-up care and key questions to ask, and caring for the person with lung cancer. It's my pleasure now to turn over to Dr. Lee.
Thank you, Dr. Messner, and thank you to Cancer Care for having me here to give a talk to caregivers and their loved ones on this very important topic. Firstly, I'd like to spend a little bit of time just focusing on the role of the caregiver, really expanding following on what Dr. Fleischman had just given a nice introduction. This role of the caregiver in communicating with the team, healthcare team, as well as the patient and the extended family is what I see critical in the care of the patient. So the first thing the first point I'd like to make is we are all on one team, the caregiver, the patient, the healthcare providers, the doctors, nurses, and the rest of the family. We're on one team. We have the one same goal of delivering the best possible care for the patient whom we all cherish. So that has to be the foundation of the framework in terms of taking care of the patient from a caregiver perspective. And therefore, as with any team, communication in the team is key to the success. And that includes communication to the medical team, the nurses and doctors and the social worker, allied health professionals, and also the patient, the family, friends, other extended loved ones. That communication can be complex, but it's critical to the success, and only through good communication the best possible care can be delivered. And if you happen to be a caregiver for your loved one, I really see you as a great blessing for the patient in this unfortunate circumstance of suffering from lung cancer. So that's really the role of the caregiver, very, very important. Now, in terms of the actual duties or actual tasks that the caregiver delivers. This, there is a spectrum. But most importantly, it's advocating for the well-being of the patient, your loved one. This may, in the different scenarios of care, and this may actually evolve from a setting where the patient is actually very capable and quite physically well and still making a lot of decisions for him or herself, and the caregiver is there as a support on the side to communicate, to smooth out the communication between the patient and the medical team. And this because when the patient is faced with such deadly disease in such circumstances, a lot of fear, a lot of uncertainty, and you can forget a lot of things. And a lot of the communication may, a lot of questions may be forgotten. But when I see the doctor, you suddenly blanked out. I had all these questions. I can't remember them anymore. And what did the doctor just tell me in that clinic? I have forgotten them all. The caregiver is there as that support. And it can be very, very important in terms of treatment adherence, follow-up, scheduling, and just being able to get on track with treatment plans. And I see that really time and time again, I have had the help of the caregiver to deliver that to my patient. And sometimes patients are very sick. I really rely on that caregiver. Can you please help, you know, make sure the patient comes to this treatment and let me know where there are problems. And the caregiver can sometimes take a very active role in providing that support. And then as the care evolves and you may actually be, as the patient gets better, for example, as the disease is cured, for example, in the fortunate cases of lung cancer has been cured, the caregiver may take a slightly more backseat because as the patient gets back on track, goes back to normal life, and you're just seeing me once a year for surveillance, you may be just on the side and you're taking a backseat. The patient is well, but still having that support by the side is very meaningful. And I've developed that kind of rapport with both the patient and caregivers over many years, and it's a very, very rewarding process. Even 5 years down the track after the lung cancer is cured, the patient and the caregiver comes up to the clinic. It's like an old friend seeing each other again. That may be an outcome for the caregiver. On the flip side, if the lung cancer is not cured and the cancer progresses and becomes challenging to manage and the patient's condition may deteriorate, and along with the function, the ability to remember and ultimately to even make decisions, the caregiver may take a more and more front seat role in the care of the patient. And in some cases, the patient may need to actually appoint a medical proxy to act on behalf of the patient when the patient is unable to make decisions. And also, even when the patient is able, the caregiver plays a more dominant role in medical care and decision-making in one team together with the healthcare team. Then that really role becomes more and more involved. And big decisions that may need to be made. And really, as the caregiver, you are the one who knows the patient the best, your loved one the best, and his or her wishes, what's important to him and to her, what are the values in that patient's life. You probably know best, more than the doctor, more than the care team, and your role in communicating that across is really of utmost importance when we faced in challenging circumstances of care like that. So moving on to specific clinical follow-up care and scenarios, and what are the key questions and what are the key things that the caregiver ought to be thinking? Well, just following on from that sort of overview, the first question in terms of care would be, what is the ultimate goal of care? And I ask that myself as a physician. Can this lung cancer be cured? That would be my first question as a physician. And if the goal of care is cure, then we're really on a path, usually with fairly aggressive therapy, with surgery, perhaps radiation, perhaps chemotherapy, targeted therapies, and we're really throwing everything with the aim to cure, that is getting rid of the cancer once for all. And that goal has to be in line between the patient, the caregiver, and the treating team. While at the same time, of course, trying to maximize the quality of life throughout the treatment endeavor. And however, with lung cancers, in a lot of depending on the stage of disease and the molecular biology of the disease, in often cases, the lung cancer cannot be cured, but it can be treated, it can be managed, life may be prolonged, and the quality of life of the patient may be improved with good care. And when that becomes a reality, the goal of care would be to prolong life and to maximize quality of life, but not no longer a cure. And in those circumstances, so such key question needs to be asked by the caregiver, by the treating physician, by the patient, and the whole team needs to be aware. And the caregiver may even play a role to communicate that across to the extended family. For example, if you are the son of the patient and you have siblings, other brothers and sisters who may not be here physically but who remain engaged and who need to know as the caregiver or the proxy, I think there is a very important role there in communicating that with the rest of the family so that everyone is on one page as one team and we deliver the best care for that one goal of maximizing quality of life and maximizing survival for that patient. So that is the first question. What is the goal of care? And in the clinic setting, the patient, you may be accompanying the patient to see different physicians because lung cancer care may be multidisciplinary. We may need the skill of many lung cancer specialists, including surgeons, radiation oncologists, and medical oncologists, pain and palliative care specialists. You'll see nurses. They are integral to the care of patients and social workers, counselors, physical therapists. You may be seeing really a multitude of care providers, and it's very, very easy to get lost in that process. You know, you have so many appointments lined up. Where am I going and what am I doing? And it's very easy when you're sick with lung cancer to really be lost in that process. Being the caregiver, you're really steering the ship and you're really turning on the light and guiding the patient in that process. So it's important to be to help the patient to know who we're seeing and also communicate any concerns and issues with the healthcare team. It may be useful to, when the patient has a question, you know the patient has certain questions, it may be useful to write them down on a piece of paper, and then at the clinic setting you can relay those questions to the healthcare provider, because it's very easy to forget those things. And being a good communicator also means being a good listener. So when the healthcare team explains the situation, the medical conditions, the prognosis, and it may be very important to listen, and that those sort of discussions may already answer a lot of the questions that you already have. But in addition, bring them up and clarify and talk and help the patient understand at the same time. So you're providing that very important role there. And in the if the patient becomes very unwell, and that's when they really need you the most as the caregiver, to be by their side, if it's in the hospital setting, it's comforting for the patient to have their caregivers present. And And in that situation, the patient may be really relying on the key caregiver to even make medical decisions on behalf based on your best understanding of his or her wishes, when particularly when the patient is really unable to make such decisions. So you're advocating for the patient right from the start and right to the end. And again, such communication is really vital to the care of the patient. And so when, as a caregiver, you may have your own anxieties and fears of uncertainty, and it's also very important to communicate that across to the care team. Remember, we're one team, and we really have to help each other here. And of course, the patient's anxieties and fears. But I believe through good communication between the medical providers, the patient, and the caregivers, we can really resolve all the problems and really deliver the best care through good communication. So I will just stop on that note that really communication is the key. Thank you.
Oh, thank you so much, Dr. Lee. That was really excellent and outstanding, and a lot of important issues in terms of the important role of the caregiver in communicating, and a lot of good communication tips and issues. So I know the questions for you during the Q&A. Thank you. And our next speaker is Ms. Carly O'Brien. Ms. O'Brien is an oncology social worker. She's our caregiver program coordinator at Cancer Care. And Ms. O'Brien is going to address coping with holidays, birthdays, and special occasions, managing family, friends, partners, and traditions, coping with the stress of caregiving, and self-care tips. It's my pleasure now to bring over to Ms. O'Brien.
Thank you so much, Dr. Messner, and I'm happy to be part of such an important call today. We know that managing the stresses of everyday life can be challenging in itself, managing working and family and goals and other priorities, but adding the impact of a loved one's lung cancer diagnosis can be especially taxing, both for the person with cancer and the caregiver, especially when you factor in the impact of the disease itself and also treatment side effects. But for caregivers, paying attention to your loved one's physical and emotional needs, as well as your own, are really important elements that can help you to make the most of each day, as well as special occasions that come up. Caregivers, check in with yourself about what your priorities are each day. Know that those are important and valid, and be sure to be intentional with those things that are most important to you. To help you cope with each day, enlist the support of friends, family, or professional support to help you make sense of what your needs are and to strategize about how you can work to get them met. Also, being flexible and being patient with yourself can really help you to make the most out of your experience as a caregiver. And while we do talk a lot about the challenges that come with caregiving, it's equally important to remember the opportunities that come along with this role. Remember why you're fulfilling this role in the first place and what it means to you. Some caregivers feel that they get a clearer understanding of their loved one's needs as well as their own. Some feel that they do have a stronger connection or bond with their loved one after the course of caregiving. Some feel an improved sense of communication and the ability to just appreciate the simple moments together. Those are just a few of those potential opportunities, and they're there if you allow yourself to see them. So reflecting on these opportunities often, rather than just focusing on the challenges, can offer you a sense of hope and comfort that can really be empowering. Special occasions, birthdays, and anniversaries often represent times of celebration and connecting with loved ones. But coping with lung cancer and caregiving during these special days can be stressful. A lot of caregivers feel that there are lots of expectations placed upon them for how they should approach these kinds of events. And this can feel undoubtedly overwhelming. So I'd encourage you to consider what makes the most sense for you and your loved one and be mindful of giving in to those shoulds. There are a lot of things that caregivers can do to help themselves and their loved ones maximize these special occasions. You can start by really considering, what does the specific event mean to you? What are the most important parts of the celebration? Is it the people, the place? Is it the food? Is it a certain ritual or tradition? being a little bit more mindful of the significance of the event can be a helpful starting place in beginning to think about how cancer can fit into the picture rather than the other way around. And we know that planning ahead can be helpful, but we also know that you can only plan ahead so much, as sometimes the impact of a cancer diagnosis can be uncertain and can ebb and flow each day. But when you can, anticipate these occasions before they happen. Consider what you and your loved one can tolerate this year, both physically and emotionally, and give yourself flexibility to create a new tradition. We know that managing expectations is an important part of coping with a loved one's cancer diagnosis, so you might want to consider what traditions you may need to take a pass on this year, or just change or modify. Establishing new holiday or birthday traditions with close family and friends might allow both the person with cancer and caregiver to feel more satisfied and supported during these celebrations, rather than just focusing on the losses that are associated with not feeling able to participate them in the way that you used to. And remember to give yourself a break. A lot of caregivers put pressure on themselves to do it all. So just recognize your efforts, know that you're doing the best that you can, and don't hesitate to reach out for support when you need it. Something else to consider, in addition to enlisting the support of family or friends, talk with your loved one's medical team. They might have really good suggestions or tips to help you through these special events or even just the day-to-day things that might come up. And when it comes to managing family, friends, partners, and traditions, we know that that can feel like an additional role and responsibility on top of being a caregiver. But you know that phrase, it takes a village? It's very true when it comes to supporting a loved one with cancer and in getting the support that you need to be the best caregiver possible. Managing that village and the family and friends who are in your network of support can be a new experience and can be tricky to navigate sometimes. But first, when it comes to getting the support that you need as a caregiver, be sure to honor and maintain friendships, relationships, and traditions that you had before cancer in whatever ways you can. Remember, they might look a little bit different, but it doesn't have to be so all or nothing. Having some consistency and stability throughout your experience can just leave you feeling more like yourself. Managing those relationships well can be a comfort and can really help to keep you grounded. And when it comes to managing family and friends in the context of your loved one's cancer treatment and cancer care, remember that everyone has their own experience with cancer and caregiving. Oftentimes, this results in well-intended advice or suggestions, but communicating with family and friends about what feels helpful and what doesn't can help to make this support the most positive and beneficial to you. Similarly, managing your expectations of others can help you to maximize the support that's available both to you and your loved one. This means recognizing the supports that you have available and understanding what their strengths are. Consider who is good at what and start there when it comes to asking for help. And know that support often comes in unexpected ways, so keep your eyes open for those who might be ready and willing to jump in, even if it's not what you might have had in mind. Family and friends might also want information and updates about your loved one and how they're doing. They might have questions and might look to you as the caregiver for answers. So it's important that you decide what information you and your loved one feel comfortable sharing. And keep in mind that there's not a one-size-fits-all approach to giving updates and sharing news. And chances are that other family and friends want to be involved. You can help manage this by delegating certain tasks and asking for help. This helps those other people to feel useful and involved, but also gives you and your loved one an additional layer of support and gives you a little bit of a break. We know that caregiving for a loved one with cancer comes with a variety of challenges, whether you're caregiving for somebody 24 hours a day and are doing a lot of the heavy lifting, or whether you're a long-distance caregiver and caregiving from hundreds of miles away. We know that trying to find balance between your own needs as a caregiver and the needs of your loved one with cancer can be complicated and confusing at times. Part of coping well with these stressors means knowing your limitations and also being really clear with them. Much of the time, caregivers take on a lot of responsibility and have very high expectations of themselves, even when it isn't required, because of the internal pressure that they feel to, quote-unquote, do things right. But taking on too much can just leave you feeling exhausted, overwhelmed, angry, and even resentful, and this usually prevents your loved ones from getting what they need in the end. So here's something to consider. Listen to your body. It'll often give you little red flags that can tell you when you're starting to get overwhelmed. For some, it's tension in the shoulders. For others, it's irritability. For some, it's feeling really fatigued, even when you've gotten a good amount of sleep. These signs or signals can be reminders that maybe your plate's a little bit too full. At that point, exploring opportunities to reprioritize and delegate can be quite a relief. Be sure to also set limits and say no to responsibilities that you don't feel equipped for or comfortable with. This is something that can be a challenge for a lot of caregivers who feel a sense of obligation or a duty to take on certain roles. But sometimes saying no is more helpful than taking on a task that may leave your safe or unsupported. So be sure to have a conversation about what these limits are and have a backup plan for how to manage the things that you don't feel able to. Give yourself permission to say no. And as I mentioned earlier, another way of coping with the stress of caregiving is asking for help. Think about your own needs, and that's really the first step in being able to ask for help. Consider which responsibilities you feel comfortable passing along to someone else and which are most important for you to maintain. Oftentimes, the easiest tasks to delegate are the practical ones. Being specific about the kind of help that you need and keep records of who's handling which task. Try giving a few options for specific tasks that might be helpful, like driving your loved one to treatment, picking the kids up from school, or dropping off a meal. Giving several choices to potential helpers allows them some choice in what they feel they can manage and often makes them more likely to accept. And again, this gives you some much-needed respite without sacrificing your loved one's needs. And of course, be kind and gentle to yourself as you navigate your role as a caregiver. This is an important coping strategy. Allow yourself to feel the range of feelings that come with this new role and give yourself room for trial and error. It's par for the course. Communicate openly about your questions and concerns to help mitigate stress and prevent burnout. And as I mentioned earlier, try seeing those opportunities that come with caregiving and finding a sense of meaning or purpose in this role. It can help you to feel less burdened by it. Clearly, self-care is an integral part of the caregiver experience, and I know I've mentioned that a few times, but that's for good reason. In order to be a good caregiver to someone else, you've got to be able to take care of yourself. It's like the message that they give you on an airplane. Make sure to put on your oxygen mask first before helping others. The same goes for caregiving. And when we talk about caregiving and self-care, we mean both physical and emotional self-care. Focusing on both these components can help to ensure that you're in a good place and are equipped to take on the responsibilities and impact of caregiving. Some tips that I offer to caregivers when it comes to self-care is to just start with the basics. Are you eating 3 meals a day? Are you getting a decent amount of sleep? Are you doing some kind of physical activity at least once a day? One thing that caregivers find especially helpful is to start your self-care regimen with the idea of maintaining what already works rather than just adding in a lot of extras, because that can just leave you feeling more exhausted. Be sure that you're taking care of your own physical health by scheduling regular physical exams with your doctors and being on top of any other follow-up care that you might need. Get organized, keep a calendar of your own appointments, and make sure that your own physical health is as much of a priority as your loved one with lung cancer. It's true that feeling physically healthy can improve your mood and outlook, so the benefits are twofold, both for you and for your loved one. But something that I hear again and again and again is that there's a misconception that self-care has to take a lot of time, energy, or money. But the reality is that sometimes it just takes a little bit of creativity. I certainly understand that you might not have an opportunity for a spa day or a Caribbean vacation, but can you go for a short walk on your lunch break, call a friend, journal, schedule a monthly date night, and keep it on the calendar no matter what, have something to look forward to? Self-care can even mean something as simple as taking some slow, deep breaths when you're feeling overwhelmed, spending 5 extra minutes in the shower, or going to bed a half hour earlier than you normally would. Again, being intentional with your self-care efforts can make them part of your daily routine and can make you feel better able to tolerate some of the challenges that come with caregiving. And ultimately, this helps you to manage stress. And reaching out for additional support is another healthy way to cope with stress and to improve self-care. It'll leave you feeling stronger and more resilient. This can be spending time with supportive family members or friends, connecting with a counselor, joining a support group. Nonetheless, feeling connected to other people can be restorative, and it helps you to feel less alone in your experience. So keep in mind that Cancer Care is a national nonprofit organization that is staffed by licensed master's level oncology social workers, and we provide some of that support that can help you to manage stress and care for yourself. All of our services, including individual counseling and support groups, are free of charge. We're experienced in helping people to manage the emotional, physical, and financial challenges that arise after a diagnosis and throughout the caregiver experience. We offer counseling services, support groups, and educational resources like the workshop that you're listening to right now, and we can provide information about other resources, practical help, and sometimes even offer a limited financial support. So if you're interested in learning more about our services or participating in a cancer care support group, please call our toll-free HOPE line at 1-800-813-4673 to speak with an oncology social worker or visit our website at www.cancercare.org for more information. And lastly, I just want to take a minute to commend you all for listening today to this call. It's a step in the right direction in terms of taking good care of yourself, so keep doing what you're doing, and thank you so much for your time today.
Oh, thank you so much, Ms. O'Brien. That was really excellent, really amazing. And just and that whole concept of being intentional with your self-care, we'll probably talk more about that during the Q&A, but that's wonderful, just a wonderful idea or notion. And actually it's true, kudos to everybody who's on the call today because you're obviously taking time to attend to your own needs today on this call. So now I want to thank our speakers, and now we have time for questions. We have lots of time for questions, and I'm going to ask Andrea to explain to all of you how to queue up for questions. I'm also going to ask Andrea to bring all of our speakers on board so that they're all here to address your questions. So we'll do all of that, and then we'll start taking your questions. And if we don't get to all of your questions, at the end of the call, I will give you information of how to get your questions answered. So we won't leave you without. If we didn't get to your specific question, we will leave you with the way to get your questions answered. But let's see how many we can take right now. So Andrea?
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to ask a question, please press star, then 1 on your touch-tone telephone. If your question has been answered and you wish to remove yourself from the queue, you may press the pound key. Those of you on the web may submit questions by clicking ask a question. Again, to ask a question at this time, please press star and then 1.
And we have a question from one of our online participants. So what advice can you provide to a parent caregiving for a young adult with lung cancer? So I'm going to ask Carly if you could start with that one.
Sure. So caregiving for a young adult with a diagnosis like lung cancer can be challenging in a lot of ways. For the young adult who's been diagnosed, this was very likely very unexpected and comes as a shock, especially at this point in a young adult's life. So they might have been just gearing up to start their own career or start thinking about starting a family or might just feel like they're starting to get their lives settled in terms of having some independence. So for parents who are caregiving for a young adult with cancer, I would say just be mindful of this and how difficult this period of time in their life would have been without cancer. So recognizing what the patient's needs were pre-cancer is really important. Allowing them to have some independence and some autonomy will likely go a long way. I recognize that's easier said than done. But giving them space and time to become an advocate for themselves and to process things for themselves is really essential. But I'd also say to the parent, just be gentle with yourself and seek out support.
Thank you. And does anyone want to add to that, Dr. Fleischman or Dr. Lee? Okay.
I think what said has been correct.
Okay. Excellent.
Yeah, it's probably here. I also concur with exactly with what's said. It's an incredibly difficult time to have your own son or daughter diagnosed with this lung cancer, it's a terrible disease, and to be faced with that kind of uncertainty and there's certainly it's certainly not easy, but again, I think the healthcare team is on your side. We work together as one team, and your fears and concerns need to be communicated across to the healthcare team. And also, we work together to deliver the most best care for your son and daughter. And that's it's important, as Ms. O'Brien said, to also give some space so that your young adult child who can actually make his or her wishes known as well, what's important to him and her, because life still needs to go on, and what's important in his or her life, everyone on the team needs to hear that as well. And I've found in my practice that parents who are very caring naturally, those who give that a level of space, often we end up with the best possible care, and that's when things go the best, and that's when the patient is happier, and that's when the care becomes much smoother as well, and with better outcomes.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much. And we have a question from one of our telephone participants. Andrea?
Our next question comes from the line of Larice H. Your line is open.
Hi, I was just wondering if somebody had some a tip on how to get the patient to sleep better. You know, he's in a lot of pain, and is there a position that's more comfortable or something you could recommend for sleeping? I've tried different products, but they don't seem to help.
Excellent. That's an excellent question. Dr. Lee, do you want to address that? I'll ask Dr. Fleischman as well. And
yeah, I don't find a one sort of magic solution for every patient on this. Some patients work better with adjusting medicines because certain medicine. Some patients are just particularly sensitive to certain medicines that make them stay up at night. Others do well with exercises during the day. So go for walks. And they sleep better at night. That often works for many of my patients. Others do better with music. I don't know of a particular sleep position that works universally, but certainly I've heard stories and anecdotes from my patients. They sleep on this side and that side. It's better. And some even give me websites of certain music therapy that works for them, but it may not work for everybody. So that's on a case by case. But I think lifestyle modification, and one needs to be a little inclusive of different approaches here, is really the best way to start. And that's eating well, exercises during the day, go for walks, and think of other things, including music and also speaking to the healthcare team regarding any medications that may actually cause insomnia.
Thank you. Excellent.
I'll pick up there. Sleep is one of those problems in cancer that we don't yet know much about and we haven't paid too much attention to. Dr. Lee is correct. There's no one universal position, but trying different positions to see which is best, including a number of pillows and sleeping with the head elevated and maybe in a reclining, and sitting up, a little bit more sitting up is sometimes helpful to people. What is also helpful to people, in my experience over many years, and I know this seems kind of simplistic, but it sometimes works, is having a fan in the room and the passing air seems to be soothing. It depends upon the temperature, where you live, if the heat is on, or what the temperature in the room is, because most people sleep better when it's a little bit cool. But having passing air often helps people feel a sense that they're able to breathe well, and that can help, and it's not expensive. It's rather inexpensive. number of medicines that are used during treatment of lung cancer, especially for pain and for nausea, cause sedation, and when those are used during the day, it changes the body's natural rhythm. So it sometimes means that someone, one of the physicians, often the medical oncologist, but it could be the symptom management specialist or the palliative care specialist or a really experienced nurse will sit down and look at the total list of all medicines, including over-the-counter medicines, and try to align the times of the doses properly so that you can work on getting some sleep. That may not be nighttime sleep. It may be afternoon. Many people enjoy taking naps, whether they have lung cancer or not. Naps are often a good thing, but the sleep experts tell us that if we nap more than 30 minutes or so during the day, that will also affect our abilities, body's ability to fall asleep naturally at night, so that needs to be addressed.
Excellent. And Ms. Barr, do you want to comment on that as well in terms of just what you hear from some of the participants?
Right. I would also say that it's important to recognize that feeling frustrated or anxious that you can't sleep certainly isn't going to help matters. So in addition to the physical things that are going on, trying to use some relaxation techniques, really doing some meditation, deep breathing, guided imagery, those can be especially helpful at nighttime. Also just checking in about your loved one's general sleep hygiene. How dark is the room? Are they turning off technology early enough before bedtime? Are they stopping eating closer to bedtime? Those kind of things are also important because they sort of paint a fuller picture. You know, we're not just trying to manage the disease and the physical impact of the disease, but you also want to think about the emotional impact of not feeling able to sleep or not being comfortable. So I think the relaxation piece is really important to recognize too.
And actually, we have a follow-up comment. This is a really great audience today, really wonderful questions, and a wonderful comment from one of our online participants to the young adult issue. The comment from Robin was that engaging the peer friend network for support and also getting them involved with a potential AYA, young adult program, at the cancer center where they are being treated. So I wonder, Ms. O'Brien, if you could address that, because I know we have an active program here and there are many cancer centers as well, special programs for young adults, which actually, if you want to cover the age range, the young adult programs consist of as well.
Sure. So most young adult programs really target the population of people in their 20s and 30s who are coping with a cancer diagnosis. And the good news is that there's a lot of support for this particular population because we recognize that the needs are just different. Cancer Care does offer specific supportive services for young adults with cancer. We also offer specific services for young adults who are in a caregiver role. So we target that population in a couple of different ways. But as the caller mentioned, I think it is important to check in with your treatment center to see if there are AYA or adolescent and young adult specific resources available there. Cancer Care has a section about young adults on our website at cancercare.org. And there's a really good organization called Stupid Cancer that really advocates for the needs of the young adult with cancer population. And their website is stupidcancer.org. So that's another really good one that's got a ton of services and some really great programs that I'd recommend checking out. And they're really at the forefront of supporting young adults with cancer.
Excellent. And another question.
Sorry, I just want to put one more comment just to the parents who have the son or daughter with lung cancer. I'm not offering specific medical advice, but just being a medical oncologist, I can't help just say one line. Just do talk to his or her oncologist about next generation sequencing of the lung cancer. And that's because we are seeing nowadays an increasing number of patients, young patients often, who never smoked, who have developed lung cancer. And we are now uncovering an increasing number of genetic mutations. They're not inherited, but they're environmentally, probably environmentally driven. Uncovering these mutations that may be targeted with new drugs, and a lot of them are in development in clinical trials. Some are already FDA approved, and that question should be this post to the medical oncologist and discussed and personalized that.
Thank you. This is a wonderful, I must say, it's just a wonderful back and forth between our participants and our speakers. It's really it's a large group of people, but the questions are wonderful and the interaction is terrific. And we have a wonderful question. What are some self-care tools for a caregiver? Although we've talked about them, I guess it's probably as we are approaching the conclusion of the call, perhaps that might be a nice way to pull this all together. And Ms. O'Brien, do you want to talk about some just self-care tools? You may have mentioned some, but probably always good to hear them again or add to them.
Of course. Yeah, you know, I think some of the best self-care tools are the ones that we already possess ourselves. So just checking in with yourself, taking your temperature, not literally but figuratively, checking in with yourself when you notice that you start to feel frustrated or overwhelmed, seek out support, do those basic self-care strategies like eating well, exercising when you can, trying to get a good night's sleep. Really starting with the basics, I think, is the most important thing in terms of self-care. There are also some caregiver self-care checklists or self-assessments online. I think we linked to that on Cancer Care's website. If not, I can make sure that goes up there. Just to sort of give you a space to reflect on what you're feeling physically and emotionally and to take stock of what's happening for you and how to better deal with things. And, of course, reaching out for support to organizations like Cancer Care and other programs, I think, to help you really figure out how to best be good to yourself is important.
Oh, thank you so much. And Dr. Lee, do you want to?
I agree with all of the above.
Okay, and Dr. Fleischman?
Same thing.
Here's somebody. Actually, here's an interesting. We're about to from one of our online participants. They said, "And allow yourself some fun." Ms. O'Brien, do you want to comment on that?
Yeah, I think sometimes we underestimate the power of just being silly and laughing and doing fun things. Oftentimes when cancer comes into the picture, life gets very serious very quickly, and for good reason, but that doesn't mean that people have to forfeit their ability to laugh and have fun and be lighthearted. So I always encourage people to take time to see the simple pleasures in life, to laugh at things, to have fun, and, again, to make that a priority, to have something to look forward to. But I think humor and fun are really important self-care strategies, really, and they can go a long way for the mind, the body, and the soul. So definitely laugh and have fun. Don't let cancer stop you from doing that.
I'll reiterate that. A number of years ago, a very famous writer actually believed that he helped cure his rheumatoid arthritis by watching tapes of comedy shows. And although that's hard to link medically, it certainly makes you feel a lot better along the way. So for whatever reason, it's a good thing. And with the technology we have, it's so much more available to all of us.
And it's interesting how we always think that fun is, it feels like it doesn't fit with the topics we're talking about today. And yet what we're concluding with is that actually one does need to give oneself some space for that. And again, Ms. O'Brien, do you want to comment on that concept of this, as if they're worlds apart, but actually they're so important? The importance of just being able to have a moment to have some fun in spite of the seriousness of dealing with these issues.
I think this is really a really good mindset to have. I know it can be very difficult, but I myself, being a medical oncologist, have learned a lot from patients who actually turn this desperate circumstance into a humorous approach, adapt this sort of approach to life. And these patients who are able to come to clinic and still make jokes and be themselves really keeps hope alive and also really improves the quality of their life, no doubt. And it helps with treatment planning. It helps with getting onto the best treatment. And even though I don't have any studies or statistics on this matter, but just from a physician's point of view, I really believe that these patients do well, and to have this approach is really helpful to keep up your sense of humor and to try and have fun and enjoy yourself whenever you can, and that's that can be infectious in many ways.
And Dr. Fleischer, we have another comment coming in. Thank you. So the concept of another comment from an online participant, to remove yourself from caregiving once in a while, respite care for yourself. Do you want to comment on that, Dr. Fleischman, and just the realities of all the different emotions that people may be flooded with as a caregiver?
All of us realize that whether we're working at a paid job, a volunteer job, caring for a family, that as important as that is, we just need a break. Sometimes that can be a short amount of time, taking a walk, just getting out and away for a few minutes, as long as there's someone there to make sure that the situation is safe and all the things that you put in place are being taken care of in your absence. So that is traditionally tried and true advice that we give to caregivers all over. Take a little bit of time for yourself, and it really helps you continue, because otherwise may not be able to manage the long haul.
And do you want to comment also about all emotions, that people have such a range of emotions that all are acceptable? That these kind of
We often say that people go through cancer the way they go through the rest of their lives, and the same holds true for caregivers. Some caregivers feel confident and able to do everything and rise to the occasion, and some people feel that they need to rely on others for help, and sometimes that changes in one person's tenure as a caregiver from week to week and month to month. So not to be a different person, I think, is really what we see. We see people going through being a caregiver the way they've done everything else in their life.
Well, I want to thank all of our speakers. You've been terrific, actually wonderful speakers, outstanding. And I want to thank all of our participants who've really both asked questions but also made some really wonderful comments that contributed to really the program today. So that's been really amazing. And in concluding the program today, I want to and also thank all of you as participants who've been listening. Now, I did say that if you have any questions that you didn't get to have answered, and I know there are still questions in queue, I want you to know that there are different places that you can get different questions answered. So if you should have any medical questions that you actually are still struggling with for answers to, I do suggest you call, first of all, consult with your healthcare team. Of course, they're always a wonderful place to go to with questions. And then in addition to that, if you wanted to call a very reputable site or contact them, the National Cancer Institute at 1-800-422-6237, or www.cancer.gov, and we will send that information to all of you. You've probably gotten it already in some of your materials. In addition, if you are someone who is interested in pursuing some support with our social work staff here at Cancer Care, any of the services in terms of both counseling services, support groups, practical and financial assistance, other workshops, publications, I would go ahead and call Cancer Care. And for that number, I would call 1-800-813-4673. Most importantly, as we conclude our program today, I don't want any one of you to think that you're alone in coping with a cancer. This program focuses on lung cancer, but in focusing on any type of cancer, I want you to know that you're now part of the cancer care community. Do contact us. Our staff are here to address your questions and concerns. Also, I do want to let you all know that we have an interesting program coming up on December 5th on managing sensory disruptions during cancer treatments. And so some of you may be interested in that program, and some of you have signed up for it already, but just in case you hadn't heard about it, just that you're aware of it. Again, I want to thank you all for your participation today. I want to wish you all a very fine day, and thank you all for your extraordinary participation today on our program.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for your participation. This concludes the workshop, and you may now disconnect. Everyone have a great day.